You're listening to the CryptoCast podcast.
Welcome to the Crypto and Blockchain Talk.
Hello.
Hey.
Guten Tag.
Aloha.
Tere.
Shalom.
Hallo.
Namaste.
Ni hao.
Vivet.
Hello.
Salut.
Yassas.
Salve.
Ciao.
Bonjour.
Our podcast talks about the latest trends in the worlds of cryptocurrencies and the blockchain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Crypto and Blockchain Talk. Today with me, I have Stefan Jonstrand, who is the CEO and co-founder of Grupo Tecmared, which is Spain's leading media company specializing in providing information and knowledge about sustainability, energy, and new technologies for buildings and cities. Hello, Stefan. How are you?
I'm very fine, thank you. Happy to be with you.
Oh, I'm so excited because we are going to be talking about one of my favorite topics in the world. Now, I know that you have written many books and papers on the following subject, but I will now tell our audience that we are going to be talking about smart cities and blockchain. And we're going to really dive deep into this. And I'm really, really super excited as well, because you will also be speaking at a conference called Blockwalks on October 10th in Bratislava. Is that correct?
That is correct.
I cannot wait. I actually think I will be going. Matter of fact,
Thanks for listening to the CryptoCast podcast. Stay tuned for more episodes.
It's an excellent congress.
I'm so excited because smart cities is something which really drives my imagination. It brings me, sorry to use my Star Trek analogy so early on, everyone, but it brings me to a place where no man has gone before. And I really can see the future. And I think what we should do is start the podcast with the following. Stefan, what is a smart city? Can you please explain this for the audience?
Like in general terms, smart cities are cities that use information and communication technology for their administration and the services they provide for a better economical and social and environmental development. But smart cities is not only the digitalizing of existing services, because that has been going on for 30 years or more. Smart cities try to offer existing services in new ways, to offer new and better services. And this is actually done through the integration of the services and the organization of cities. Traditionally have been in what are called silos, like one silo in one area dealt with mobility, another one about education, a third one about security, and another one about healthcare, etc. So what smart cities do, that they try to connect all these areas, and they do that as these areas are generally digitalized and use IT through what's called a platform. And if we put a platform that is able to speak the different languages and interpret the messages and information flowing in these silos, we can actually connect all these areas into one information platform, one service platform that is so much more efficient and can provide so much more and interesting new services than the traditional cities can do.
Now, you see, I find that really interesting for a number of aspects. And some people already know that I actually have to work for the UK government. So yeah. I do have a very deep interest in making sure that the living environment, the whole, in terms of place shaping and making a place more agreeable, habitable, enjoyable, every word you can think of that means a better life for the community as well as the visitors. It's something which I'm truly interested in. Government anyway normally operates in some kind of silo system. You have a lot of places where, well, I should say most governments, they have one department doing something to do with, like you said, data, security, or healthcare, or education. Then you have another department over here dealing with transportation and God knows what. And a lot of the time, they don't even talk to each other. But what do you think? So are you now just kind of bringing the blockchain aspect into this? Do you think the blockchain is what is going to be that commonality, that link between making sure all this binds together?
Actually, not, because these smart city platforms, these integration platforms, they have existed for 10, 15 years. But there's sort of a boom now because there's a need for smart city platforms there's a need in the cities to fight corruption. They have to be more efficient. They had to be more sustainable. Cities are actually competing between each other to attract talent and investments. So the cities, they have traditionally lived on, and nobody had really discussed about it. But now cities actually, they market themselves as brand, as places to attract these. And that's one reason that they want to be more efficient, attractive for people that live there and companies. And on the other side, they're facing huge problems in the future because the cities all around the world are growing. Like now, 50% of the world's population are living in cities, and very soon 60% of the world's population will live there. So there's no way to be able to continue providing the same services without trying to be more efficient. So these smart city platforms actually is a tool that is used in many, many, many cities around the world to be more efficient. So that's sort of one thing. But there's also a growth of these platforms for smaller cities because the large one, like the capitals of the nations around the world, they have used them. But now even smaller cities, like with 30, 50,000 people, they have their platforms to manage the cities better. So that's one thing about the smart city and the city platforms. So, but what I'm actually very especially super excited about, that is what blockchain can bring into the smart cities. And blockchain is actually so revolutionary and so interesting because on one hand, it has the capacity to provide transparency within the cities. So actually everybody can see what is happening with the city data. It has another component, which is the immutability, which means that nobody can change data. So it fights corruption very well. And also it's cyber secure thanks to the decentralized architecture and combined with the information stored in the blocks. So that's one part of blockchain that makes it's very valuable and relevant in city management. But the second component of blockchain that is the probably the most exciting and what I think blockchain is really will change the city platforms, city management, and city services is that you can use what is called token economy, and that's a model that can be built using blockchain, and it's based on the blockchain that uses token to represent values in the ecosystem. So it's like money, but with new functionalities. And to the cities, for example, this makes the possibility to build an economy that's not only based on currency, but using tokens that can represent other values like physical assets or services and rights. And it gives also the possibility to use properties, to give properties to the tokens and the economy for all the services that the cities provide. And you can also develop what's it called smart contracts and all this mix of this technology and use of these tokens. It generates a lot of data that is really well structured. So we can then apply all the data analytics and artificial intelligence and big data and machine learning on this. So it's sort of a step, a complexity around the cities, but it gives the possibility to do so much more than we actually do today with a straightforward management.
Well, I think, you know, it is actually interesting in one way that there's already major examples of I don't want to say a type of this. There's already major examples of this in motion. And one of them, of course, as you and I both know, is Estonia. They've been doing a number of processes already on the blockchain. I don't know if I would call it a tokenized system, because I think it's actually managed through basically the ability. It's a digital identity system, which you are given a card. It has sensitive information on it. You then have to use a special device that plugs into your computer. You use your card and that special device, and that's how you access the system for everything.
Exactly. Those three main components that we spoke about, like the cybersecurity, immutability, and transparency. That's like what they use.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, they can do everything from voting to manage their own healthcare records, education, you name it. It's all done through the blockchain. And the country has implemented this years and years and years ago. So in terms of tokenizing all of these services, can you think of anyone, or is there a case study or an example of someone who's actually doing something more along those lines?
Well, I think the most advanced area where in the public services where there is hope to be able to use this tokenization model is within healthcare, for example, but also social services and so on. But as healthcare is maybe one of the main problems, not only Western Europe, but all around the world, for the cities to handle, and the costs are skyrocketing, and the population is getting older, and the people get actually worse health year by year. So something has to be done. And today, a lot of money is invested into taking care of the sick people and the ill people. And they, what this model could provide is a platform and knowledge about what kind of preventive actions that can be taken and should be taken towards the population, because you can do a lot, and a lot of cities try to invest money in healthcare, and they give discounts for going to the gym and to exercise, to eat healthy, and to go to your your medical checks, following the routines and so on. So if the city or the nation could use tokens that could represent, one token could represent many things, but you can give tokens to visit your doctor. You can give tokens to go to the for a discount or paying the gym. You can give tokens to buy healthy food. You can give tokens to go for a walk, etc. So these tokens can be specified only to be able to be used for specific services. So it's not, you don't give 100 euros and spend them on your gym card and then give me your receipt, because that's extremely complex handling and expensive. But you can actually give a token that represents 100 euros, and you can only spend it on the gym, and you have to spend it during this month, and you have to actually then go to the gym, and we have to see that you actually have been to the gym to get the next token and so on. So money invested in the system could be distributed very efficiently, and we can also learn from the spending of these public money, because at the end there is a limited number of money and tokens that we can use, and we have to use them and distribute them as well as possible to be able to provide health to everybody and a decent life. So as I said before, if we use tokens instead of real money, these tokens have properties, and we will learn from the use of these, and say, for example, okay, everybody that received this gym token between 50 and they are between 50 and 70 years and use it, the spending on public health is actually 30% lower. They get less ill, they go more to work, etc. So we can actually learn where it's worth to spend money. Meanwhile, maybe young girls or women between 20 and 30 that get this gym token and spend it, They're not healthier than anybody else, because actually everybody goes the same percentage would go to the gym anyway. So we can actually build economies. We can also build, for example, social welfare structures around token economy, which will give much more, much better control of the spending. For example, a family that has should give money, or should that we want to guarantee that they can buy the school books, or they can pay for food or clothes for the children, because maybe there's some social problem in the family. We can mark these tokens, this money, that they can only be spent for example, buying food for the children, or buying clothes, children's clothes, or buying school books, etc. So it's a much more better control system, in the sense that we know where and how to spend this money in a better way, because at the end it's public money, and this public money is meant to be used for specific things. And then with this token economy, we can guarantee that they are actually spent on the right things.
Absolutely. And I mean, the welfare system, which of course is prevalent in almost every single European country, just in the UK alone, with their new universal credits system, something ridiculous like 20 million a month is fraudulently claimed by people who should not either have access to the benefit system or are abusing it. And I think that the blockchain should have been implemented years ago, but we won't even go there with the UK, because look, they're just a mess when it comes to the IT systems. They really need somebody to come in. And that's probably like every country in the world. But, they had that massive, the data breach, the hacking that happened in the NHS a couple of years ago. We also did a little podcast about that. That's coming out actually shortly. So, you know, this is the thing. Blockchain does have a lot of benefits to it in terms of security. But there's something I do want to kind of counter before we get into some other case studies. And let's talk now, because we're already doing it, about cybersecurity in smart cities, because apparently it's still very underfunded and extremely vulnerable to attack. According to ABI research, this lack of investment in smart cities will jeopardize the core values of smart cities. So what do you have to say about that?
I totally agree with you about that. Making cities secure and resilient is one of the main challenges for the cities today. And there's so little knowledge, and there's such a huge lack of resources. And it's a problem, because when you can't attract people good enough to manage your cybersecurity and your security issues from a public perspective, from a governmental point of view, it gets vulnerable for all the citizens. If they can't guarantee that your data is protected, if they can't guarantee that the infrastructures are protected at least well enough, then we have a huge problem. It's a problem from a city perspective, but it's also a problem from the citizens' perspective, because nobody wants their data stolen.
No.
Nobody wants all their information out on the, what you talked about earlier, the dark web and so on, mm-hmm. or wherever. So I think definitely that's one of the most important challenges for the cities today. And that's true that around the world, some places more than others, but the systems are so outdated. So it's actually not, first, there's no money to protect them, and secondly, there's not knowledge about how to protect them, and still they're connected to the internet and they get hacked, and we can see it all the time. And fortunately, not many things, at least that the public know about, happened. Not serious stuff, but it's a real huge problem.
One of the things which a lot of people probably, if they even understand blockchain in the first place, that is, and that's not just common man. We're talking about the people who would be implementing this, who are really public sector servants. And there's a huge learning curve that needs to go on here. There's a massive educational process that has to happen, because all of the public servants in the world who dedicate their life to basically making sure the environment and the services that are delivered are very much par excellence, that they are delivering services to the communities that help them through everything in their lives that they probably even take for granted. Everything from their public transportation to schools, libraries, hospitals, all this stuff is run by people still. I mean, I know, yes, blockchain is definitely not a person. It's a technology. But it still we still have people who are in charge of overseeing these processes and making sure that things are implemented. Now, it's a big ask. You know, right now, we are still at very early inception in terms of blockchain technology and everything that surrounds it, including crypto. And it doesn't matter if we're talking about tokens that are utilities or tokens that are securities. This whole thing is still very, very new. I can guarantee you right now, if I took you by the hand and we went to 10 different local authorities in 10 different countries, half of them would not only say they don't even know what we're talking about, but then the other 49.9% of them would look at us cross-eyed. You know, they would just be like so confused. It's still a very small percentage of people who, first of all, understand what this technology will bring, and then even understand their place in the whole system. And I'm sure there's even a fear factor there, because look what's just happened here in Tallinn. So in Tallinn in Estonia, they have just implemented self-driving buses, which I'm sure when they said to everyone, we're going to have these self-driving buses, it's going to be more efficient, more fluid, we can actually afford more and everything, afford more because there's less to pay in terms of salaries, because there's less people who you have to employ. So there's a plus and a minus here. The plus is better service. The minus is less employment in that particular area. But the other thing is that there will definitely be increased employment opportunities in terms of technology and cybersecurity and everything that surrounds it. But, you know, it's very hard to say to a bus driver, hey, we're going to send you now on a course that you can learn how to program and build us a new blockchain. So there's a huge learning process all around. And it doesn't matter if it's somebody who's sitting in the public sector or a child right now who's going to a STEM school, which is a science, technology, engineering, or mathematics school. You know, because a lot of these STEM schools themselves still aren't even acknowledging the word blockchain or any kind of forward-thinking technology. So I kind of feel it's all well and good that we're sitting here saying the future is looking like this, when the people who deliver that future don't even know what we're talking about. What do you think?
Yeah. I agree with you.
I love, by the way, I love setting fires, leaving them at doorsteps and going, what do you think? Yeah. And then you got to try to deal with it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but it's really, I spend all my professional life thinking about the future, about technology, architecture, urban space, technology, smart cities, smart buildings, and so on. And I wrote my thesis about this 20 years ago about smart buildings. And there are so many things that actually were included in that way of thinking that actually is common products today. Like, I actually wrote my thesis about video communication in smart homes. And today, everybody is video communicating in their smart homes. Mm-hmm. Then it was, nobody did it. But now we use Skype, we use video communication with WhatsApp, we use this. And the privacy issue, public issue, these kind of space issues that were like threatening, it was so threatening with video communication within the office space. But now everybody uses video communication. Of course we need to do it, and we have to deal with it. And we do partially learn how to deal with it. So I personally don't know, and it will be a mix of people and machines that will manage our cities in the future, because you said that they don't know what blockchain is, but most people don't even know what even IoT is. Yes. They don't know what data analytics is. They don't know what artificial intelligence is. Nope. And maybe they heard the words, but they definitely don't know what it means. How should this apply to our city? What kind of devices, IoT devices, do we have in our city? That actually they have millions of them, or hundreds of thousands of them, and they don't know that they exist, that they are like streaming the data about everything that happens in the city. So the knowledge gap is so huge and is so worrying, and I really don't know. So, but I think it's so important to speak about this, because I think there is no other possible future than that. We have to learn and we have to understand these technologies, and everybody don't have to be program smart contracts on the blockchain, but they actually, everybody has to understand, know these basic concepts, because otherwise they, most people, not all, in most areas, they don't have a place for working in our cities today. So it's so challenging. Things are going so fast. Mm. And it's not the governments or the city management that is deciding where the cities will go. They don't. And who decides where we are moving? They're the big tech companies. They are implementing these services, and the end users. And it's not the city that will decide if we have autonomous cars. It's the car industry, and the car industry, they're pushing in the speed that they want. But so I really think, I try to write about it, speak about it, teach about it, because also in areas like you could think that professionals are well-trained, they're open-minded, they're curious about the future, but I'm an architect. And when I speak about this teaching, speaking at conferences, or 80% of the architects, they don't even know what blockchain is, or actually what artificial intelligence is, and how buildings will be affected or is being affected of artificial intelligence. They don't know it. They don't understand it. And they think, nah, oh, well, the most important is the architecture, and then we add the technology. It's not like that. It's like the technology is embedded in our cities, in our buildings, in our lives.
Absolutely. And one day, it will literally run continually through everything. The roads, the buildings, it'll just be literally like one big circuit. It is extraordinary, because it's kind of like, the way I describe this a lot is, I can imagine when someone was saying to my father, hey, listen, there's something called the internet that's coming. And one day you're just going to pay things with a card or on a computer. I could just see my dad, who, by the way, you know, actually, I shouldn't say my dad, because he would have been like, yeah, I totally read about it. I could totally see the future. But I'm sure someone's father went, no, that'll never happen.
I prefer to use cash. I will never use a card.
Yep.
I prefer cash, or
yep.
I prefer to
yep.
to do reading on a newspaper.
Yeah.
With a paper newspaper.
We're at that level right now when we're kind of talking about this. What I want to do now is, because I have so many questions in my head, especially to pose to an expert like you, I first of all want to paint a picture. And then from here, we will explore the questions in my head. And I want to talk about a $7.5 billion project that is about to be built near Las Vegas, or in Las Vegas. I don't even know which one yet. But basically, there's a place called Blue Tech Park, and it's going to be the first city in the world to boast a digital revolution in motion. And they are breaking ground this December. And they will basically be a smart city on steroids. They are building this baby from the ground up, which you can do when you have virgin land and millions of square miles of desert. And so what they are building are net zero buildings with their own insular mini cities, featuring automated multifunctional designs, renewable energies, including solar, wind, water, kinetic, everything else you can think of, autonomous vehicles, artificial intelligence, augmented reality, IoT devices, robotics, super trees, and self-healing concrete structures. Already, I think I'm in a place that no man has ever gone before. Sorry, Star Trek again. I'll stop doing that. Anyway, it's going to cost over $7.5 billion, and it's going to take 6 years to complete. And it's also going to feature workforce housing, offices, retail spaces, ultra-luxury residential hotels and entertainment, which you'd expect anyway in Vegas. And of course, they're going to be showcasing energy generation, which, by the way, this is Vegas, people. They have more sunshine than you can shake a stick at. I mean, it is hot there 99% of the year. And storage, waste heat recovery, water purification, on-site waste treatments, localized air cleaning, and all these different types of technologies to give you better energy, cleaner energy, and everything in between. Now, their smart buildings are going to be equipped with, like I said before, this self-healing, energy-generating, and breathable materials. And I definitely want to ask you about the self-healing stuff. And by the way, blockchain is in use here in this project. It's going to be in use in terms of data collection. The flooring systems will also capture and reuse energy from human movement throughout the common areas and parking structures. And it just keeps going on and on and on. It is absolutely amazing. Okay, so they're expecting more than 25,000 jobs to be created. Plus, they have a program where they will also be providing on-the-job training to train people on the latest technologies to do with computer programming, AI, blockchain, and everything in between, which I find amazing. I don't know how many people they're going to be training on those aspects, but it says that these 25,000 jobs will actually be training people on these latest technologies, which I cannot tell you how much I applaud this. So in the first instance, I want to ask you this, Stefan. This is, like I said, a piece of area in a desert. It's very, very simple, I would think, to take a virgin piece of land and go, we've got $7.5 billion to make this thing fly. Let's get it done. Now, most cities in the world, if not every established city in the world, some of them, as you know, are hundreds, if not thousands of years old. It's very hard to create infrastructure or recreate technology-based infrastructure when the buildings are literally older than Christ himself. So what do you do in terms of development and money and scale and feasibility? How do you compete, or not even compete because it's really not a race? How can the cities of this world get themselves to the same place that this place in Vegas will be? Realistically,
I think it is a race. It is a race today between cities around the world to attract, as we said in the beginning, money for investment, talented people, projects, etc. So it's actually a race going on. Cities around the world, they are marketing themselves. They do marketing and branding campaigns. They have embassies around the world promoting their cities and so on. So I think it is a race, and I think this race has been going on for some years, in some areas and not so much, in some more. So, and that's my first reflection. So I think it's a race. And second, you said that it's really easy to start this from scratch. Like if you have a piece of land that you can do whatever you want. I think, of course, it's so much easier. And I think also this project, they managed to include every possible buzzword existing around city development, building, smart buildings, and efficiency and energy and so on. So, but it's great. I think it's fantastic with this kind of projects, because this could also be a good test bed, because, like you said, it's so much easier to start from scratch, start your thinking from scratch. Which is the optimized planning for the roads with the self-driving cars? How do we have to plan mobility when there's a mobility issue, not a car issue? How should we plan and do the orientation of our buildings when we actually want to capture sun for the solar panels but create shadows on the street? So it's like you have this. These endless possibilities. It's just like a blank white paper where you can start. So I wouldn't say that it's easy, but it makes possibilities are endless. So that's one starting point. And I think it's good. Like you need, I could not imagine starting and planning a new city in Las Vegas that did not have these features, because it's like, then you missed something. You need to do this if you're going to attract people and investments and tourism and intelligence and so on. So that's the second part. And of course, when we talk about Europe or wherever in the world where the cities actually are built and they are 1,000 years old, and we have the cities working the way we have to attack this problem or develop these solutions is very different, because the main mobility is in place. We have to take that one away and substitute it with another mobility. But I think that these challenges are actually going on. For example, the net zero energy buildings in Europe from the 1st of January 2020, within 4 months,
mm-hmm.
all new buildings in all Europe have to be net zero energy buildings. And the energy that actually is needed have to be produced on the building or very close to the building, and it has to be renewable energy. So this sounds like science fiction, but it's a reality. And all the public buildings have had to be net zero energy buildings since the 1st of January 2019. So this is a reality. We have to find ways how to better refurbish our buildings. We have to find new ways of integrating energy production, local energy production, where the auto consumption, we produce our own energy or part of it. And when we produce too much, we inject it into the electrical distribution network and we get paid for it. So there's a lot of models about this, and self-driving cars. I think the main challenge in the cities, for most cities, is mobility today.
Yeah.
And I think mobility, people, when we talk about mobility, many people think about my own car, but cities like London, it's not even a possibility anymore. You need to use public transportation, and you have to find multimodal mobility that can move people around the cities. But I think what we really, really need to do also is to break the current ways of work and really, really try to implement telework, work where you want. We have to find new ways and new legislation in many countries that permits this kind of modern ways of work. So you don't actually have to travel to your workplace at a specific hour every day, which is the reality for 95% of the population today. So we have to rethink. We don't only have to solve all the current problems, because some of the current problems are actually born from some stupid way or unnecessary way to do things. We have to maybe change the way we do things and then find another way to design this. But of course, in existing cities, maybe it's more efficient to build new services up on the new 5G network, and we don't have to dig up the roads, every road, and put in fiber. These are different kind of solutions. We have to work with wireless solutions for IoT, and we have to find alternative ways. So the solution is, first, is never the same for a new city as an existing city. And also, I would say there are not two cities that are alike, because every city have their own challenges. They are located on a specific place, the climate, they have the infrastructure they are surrounded by, the kind of activities going on in the city. Some cities are industrial cities, and other cities are knowledge cities, and other cities are entertainment, pure entertainment, and some cities live 100% from tourism. So all these kind of cities are unique, and we actually have to understand the problems and challenges for each city and build the solutions from those specific needs of that specific place and those people that either live and or work and or visit these cities.
So in terms of driving this, then, it's not like a major corporation is going to come in and make this happen. It is going to stem from the public sector themselves. Somebody has to take the lead. Some government, some public sector, some public authority is going to have to come in and say, we are going to do this, but in a way that is just like the case study I just presented. Isn't that the way that it's really going to take the bull by the horns? Because you're not going to find Facebook coming over here and saying, okay, listen, we're going to completely rework and paint London into a smart city now, or paint Zug into a smart city. It's not going to happen like that. It's going to have to be kicked into action by those governments. Do you not agree?
I agree, because it's very difficult, because these are strategies and investments that are have to be planned for 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years. How do we want our cities to develop? First, every specific city, but also the cities in our country or in Europe or in our region. How do we want to live? What we are going to live from? What are needs and mobility? They're so different. So I think the biggest problem today is the lack of vision and interest of this kind of long-term future questions from the political point of view. Because politicians today, I would say, are even more short-sighted than just like 10 years ago. It's like, in some countries, like most politicians, they only look and plan and say and do things thinking of the next elections. That's the only, the horizon is the next elections. So then many people, of course, there are many, many good politicians, but these questions are so complex and so difficult, so that it's actually not going to be one political party that says, oh, we have this great idea, we're going to solve this problem in this and this and this way, and this going to we are going to push this like the following 20 years. Because if they have an energy strategy or politics, the other parties won't follow them, because they don't want them to succeed in this. It depends on which countries we talk about. I'm Swedish, and I lived in Sweden 30 years, and maybe the possibilities for cross political decisions is actually big. Okay, you can have national strategies concerning pensions, energy, education, and so on. But the last 20 years I've lived in Spain, and in Spain, like all these kind of things that I said, it's actually just impossible. Every new government that comes, that actually comes every 3, 4, 5 years, because the political system is extremely mature, like they threw away everything that's been done before. We're going to change the educational system, the energy systems, or the strategies and everything. So, for example, huge energy investments in the beginning of the 21st century that was done in Spain, that was leading nation in solar energy. Like in 2009, it like got thrown out all the strategies and so on, and whole industry actually died from that. So these are huge strategical political decisions that have to be made cross political parties. Right. And I don't know if it's I'm very doubtful in many places how this is going to be done, and actually who will push this. If it's just finally a huge problem with economy, and when the nation or the cities can't provide the services like for healthcare anymore, that they desperately will look for another solution, and the best solution would be provided of some of these IT companies that like build a huge healthcare IT infrastructure that is supposed to save a lot of money. Although I think that everybody has some kind of not responsibility, but everybody interested in this, they really have to dig down into technology, understand what technology can do for the cities in the future, and not just look at the problems we have today. Because if you look at what we have today, where we still have many cities working like they did during the industrial society, you're not going to find the answers there. You're going to find the answers in technology. That's definitely where we have to look.
And that's where we go back to square one, educating everybody. And that's where I think I'm going to say to everyone who's listening to this podcast, this is only the beginning. It really is. We are, again, just like in blockchain, we are at the very early stages of the adoption of smart cities into all living spaces. It is a very, very new and dynamic topic. Stefan, I would like to thank you so much for coming on to Crypto and Blockchain Talk.
Thanks a lot. It's been exciting to talk to you and listen to you and learn from you and share my thoughts with your listeners.
Oh, well, I've got to tell you, I am really excited to hear everything that you're going to be saying at BlockWalks. If you would like more information on BlockWalks, please go to blockwalks.com. It's a one-day conference. It's going to really mainly be for the public sector who really do need this education and to really embrace all of these case studies and really see what they can do. But this is something that's being held. This conference is being held on the 10th of October this year, 2019. And again, go to the website for more information. And also, if you want to see more information about Stefan and his background, there's a full bio about him on there. I would like to thank everyone for listening to this week's podcast. Please invite your friends and family to download us on a multitude of platforms, including iTunes, Podbeam, Stitcher, Spotify, SoundCloud, Acast, and I could go on for another 10 minutes. There's a full list on cryptoandblockchaintalk.com. In addition, please leave really nice comments on Facebook and give us a thumbs up on Twitter. But most importantly, we do love hearing from you. Please email us at education@savvydigital.com. That's education@savvydigital.com. Don't be shy. Let us know what you want us to talk about. We really want to explore these topics for you, and we will unashamedly go at them until you can really truly understand what is happening in this space. Again, thank you for joining us as our listener. We love having you. Take care and goodbye.
CryptoCast podcast. Stay tuned in for more episodes.